This is Circe Olson Wessner, Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking to Lieutenant Colonel Bob Holliker via telephone, so I wanted to say hello. Hi, Colonel.
Good afternoon.
So, you're an Air Force veteran, are you?
I am.
How long were you active duty, and what was your MOS, your job?
I went on active duty in July of 1968, and I retired in July of 1988, and I was a pilot in the Air Force.
So, speaking of that, you wrote a blog called Lonely Pilot. Well, you write a blog called Lonely Pilot Bob. Can you tell us how the name came about?
Yes, I can. When I was promoted to Lieutenant Colonel, one of my friends took an article out in the paper, but before I knew this, as we were preparing for the promotion party, I began to receive calls, random calls, and people would say, "Hi, is this Bob?" And I'd say, "Yes, it is." And they'd say, "Well, congratulations on your promotion." And then another call would come in, "Bob, why are you lonely?" And I'd say, "I'm not lonely." And it was just one after another that would come in for the better part of a day and a half to 2 days. And I couldn't figure out why all these calls were coming in. Well, as it turned out, it was a classified ad that this friend of mine had taken out that said, "Lonely Pilot Bob has been promoted. Call him anytime, day or night."
Wow.
So that's how it came about.
So you just said you weren't lonely, but is that a reference to something else, or he just
no,
did that?
No, I think it's a reflection of the sick friends that I have.
Well, it does make for a good story and a good blog name. So you've got that going for you. So in addition to being a pilot, you were also a military dependent. So was your dad in the Air Force too then?
He was. He was recalled in 1950 and then subsequently retired in 1965.
What does recalled mean?
Well, he'd been in the Army Air Corps during World War II and had gotten out. And then when the Korean War took off, he got recalled to active duty.
Oh, okay. So you were a military family. Tell me a little bit more about your family. Did you have brothers and sisters or an only child?
Well, I have one of each. I'm the oldest of three. I have a brother that's 2 years younger and a sister that's 5 years younger than I am.
Okay, and I'm just going to ask you really quickly. I know you joined the military. Did any of them join the military?
My brother was in the Air Force for 10 years.
Okay, so now when you were a little kid, did your family move a lot, or did your mother stay put stateside while your dad went off to different assignments? How did it work in your family?
Beginning in 1950, we moved about every 2 years, and the whole family packed up and moved, most often together.
Did you like moving?
I did. It was a thrill to me every 2 years to go and explore new lands and so forth. I didn't really know any different. It's what we were raised to do, or raised, and it was my normal to move every 2 years.
Did you have a favorite place you like to go, or?
You know, I'm asked that frequently or on occasion, and it's hard for me to say this was a favorite place. Because I just so enjoyed them all, looking back.
So what was a typical day for your family, or what was your home life like back then as a kid?
Well, you know, of course, we'd get up and go to school. Both Mom and Dad worked. Dad was a commissary officer, and Mom was worked in civil service as a secretary. And then we would come home and had chores to do. Me being the oldest usually ended up doing the chores because my father held me accountable to make sure the other kids fell in line, and they soon figured out that I would do those chores just to keep from being counseled.
So you took the fall for your siblings, huh?
I don't know if I took it as much as it was given to me.
So
play on semantics, sir.
So I know that a lot of my friends who had parents in the military would say that, you know, it was held over their heads that, you know, if you don't act right, it'll reflect on your parents. Did that come across in your family as well?
Loud and clear. I can't tell you how many times I was told that my father's promotion hinged on my behavior.
So did that affect your own raising of children when you were, you know, when you had your own family and you were active duty? Did your military upbringing influence how you raised your kids? Were you cognizant of the lifestyle you'd had affecting you?
That's a yes and no answer. There were some things I'm sure that I did based upon my experience. But one of them is I did not tell my kids that my promotion was a function of their behavior. I wasn't going to put that on them.
So, speaking back of your childhood influencing your parenting, did your childhood influence your decision to join the military?
No. Well, you know what? I don't know if I should be so quick with a no. I was always staring at airplanes. I loved the thought of flying airplanes, flying jets. And I knew, perhaps by the time I was 4 or 5 years old, that that's what I was going to do.
So I saw one of your blogs where you wrote about, you know, all the airplanes that were in the background. You knew them. You answered, you know, you could name and list them. And so I bet you it did have a little bit more influence than you realized. So are you a Vietnam veteran then?
I am. I did not actually serve in country, as they say. I was a C-141 pilot at the time. And we would haul war materials in and out of country and then bring out whatever they had us set to bring out.
So when you joined, you weren't drafted?
I was not drafted, no. This was just something that's been in my blood since birth, perhaps. I don't know. It was a calling I felt.
So when you finally found out you were going to be going overseas, what did your parents say? Did you tell your mom and dad that you were going?
Oh, certainly I told them I was going, but I don't, you know, my mom was concerned. I don't recall my dad saying anything.
So he didn't have any advice for you, or?
No, not that I can remember, and I doubt seriously if he did.
So on one of the blogs that I read, you talk about flying medevac in Thailand. So what was that like? And was that your main assignment while you were in the Vietnam theater?
When I was was assigned to rescue C-130s in December 1973. The hostilities for the most part were pretty well over. And we were more of in a watchdog capacity. But they did use us on occasion for air evac missions and the like. Those were very rewarding to fly on, especially when we were awarded saves for the mission.
So you worked closely with the PJs and...
We did. We did not have PJs stationed at our base, but we did have capability of carrying PJs, and if needed, we could fly to another base, upload them, and then take them to where they were needed, certainly.
So you mentioned the word being given credit for the save. What does that mean to somebody who may not understand that term?
Well, if we were scrambled, if we were directed to take off, either to pick up a patient, say at our base or at another base, and then take him to a hospital facility that had greater capacity for medical attention, if they warranted that if the command would look at the mission and the nature of the injury or the illness of the patient, and if they deemed that had the patient not gotten there, he or she could have passed away, then we were awarded a save.
So I can see how that could be very rewarding, knowing that you helped somebody. So is there an incident, either good or bad, that stands out in your mind about you know, your time over there?
Well, in July of 1974, there was a five-day period where the crews that I served with were alerted, scrambled three times, and in that five-day period, we were awarded three saves. Now, I need to make a point of clarity here. I was just the aircraft commander. I need to give the credit to all members on the crew. It's not a flying in general is a team sport. It's not a team activity. It's not an individual activity. So everyone contributed, and we were subsequently awarded three saves during those 5 days.
So we're going to change the subject a little bit about a project you're doing now, something that you're very, very passionate about. And I just wanted to sort of segue into it by saying that when I was little, I had an uncle, and like you, I lived overseas, so only every 2 years would we go and visit the family. And so I had an uncle who I only knew as being an angry person. He was an angry alcoholic, very, very bitter, not very communicative. And the only thing I knew about him was that he'd been in Vietnam, but nothing else. And my mother, of course, that was her baby brother, and she was horrified at his behavior and bewildered, but none of us really knew what he'd experienced in the war. None of us knew much about Vietnam, even. And so now, thinking back on it years later, you know, he must have had PTSD. He must have had all sorts of horrors playing through his head, but I know my grandmother wasn't interested in talking about it, and he didn't have anyone else to talk about it. And so it wasn't until later, after he died, that we found certificates and letters, and he'd been awarded a Bronze Star, and his platoon had been hit by friendly fire. And so in retrospect, thinking back, if we had only known about PTSD and maybe the VA or things like that, we could have gotten him help. But he died. He died alone and you know, in much torment. And so I'm getting at, families are affected by the military service of their loved ones. And so I know that you've been talking about something called, we'll just go on a little bit more on that. So people tell me that watching their loved ones change, it's almost like there was a pre-deployment dad and a post-deployment dad. And as kids, it's hard to understand where that anger or that disconnect is. So I want to talk now about your project, about something on a brighter note, and you've been working with your congressman in Ohio to introduce something to honor military brats. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In 2009, I was reading Military Brats by Mary Edwards Wurst, specifically the introduction by Pat Conroy. And I think it's probably taken me 2 years or so to get through that introduction because it's so poignant and I can relate to it so much. But throughout the introduction, Conroy talks about how military brats serve day in and day out, various types of ways and so forth. He sums up his introduction with, we spend our entire youth in the service to this country, and no one even knows we were there. Mm-hmm. And as I read this, trying to make sense of military brat. And then the vision of TV spots of today came to mind, where you see unit deployments, unit returns, and on occasion we see military funerals. As a brat myself, I tend to focus in on the kids. And I look at these kids and I see fear in their eyes. I see insecurities. And yes, on occasion I do see joy. But I look at these kids and I thought, why in the world can't we recognize them for what they're doing? So I wrote to my U.S. congressman. He thought it was, subsequently I thought it was a good idea, and introduced legislation into the Congress. However, it's sat there now for 3.5 years. It's a bipartisan bill. They structured it to where it's no cost to the government. It's a bill that has precedence in the form of the Gold Star lapel pin, and it's very candidly, it's the right thing to do. But for 3.5 years, it's just sat there. And so a friend of mine asked me, he said, Bob, he said, don't you think 3.5 years is a bit disrespectful to these kids? And I thought to myself, you bet I do. And then he said, well, why don't you do it yourself? And so about 2 months ago, I thought, well, why not? And so we began working on creating what we're going to call a brat pen. And this is a pen that a parent can take and present to their kids and express this gratitude to their kids for being children of military service members.
Well,
it's also a way, perhaps, where parents of yesteryear can use this to reach their kids.
You know,
so I see a lot of good in this thing.
Well, and it makes you go back to where. In Pat Conroy's quote, and nobody knew we were there. I wonder how many military kids feel like their parent didn't really know that they were there.
That's a very interesting question or observation, and I continually ask myself that, kind of based on my experience. I don't think my dad would have known how to say thank you.
And so this pin.
And you know, it's not right or wrong. It's just the way it is. It's the way it was. But that doesn't mean that I can't take one of these pens and give to my kids today.
Now,
I'm 67, and I have a son that's 40 who's in the National Guard, and I have a daughter that's 38. And when these pens are eventually produced, I will go to their homes and give them one.
So Where can we get more information about your endeavor here? Is there a website?
Well, I'm currently running a blog called bratpen.com, and there's also a Facebook page that I created called Brats : the Brat Pen, and I continually feed information into those two sites to keep folks aware of the progress we're making.
Well, so I definitely will put that on our website, too, so that people can follow your progress. Is there something that a person can do who's not living in Ohio, not in your district, to help this endeavor? Is there, how would one who's living in New York or New Mexico or overseas help you in this endeavor to get this passed in Congress?
Well, to get the bill passed in Congress, the best thing to do is to write your U.S. congressman and or senators, because once the bill passes the Congress, it still has to get through the Senate. So there's a good cause to introduce or to encourage senators to introduce a parallel bill. But, you know, it's been 3.5 years, and then once the bill is passed, it has to go to the Army, I think, Department of Heraldry, for design and so forth, and by the time they get done with it, there's a good chance I'll be awarded mine posthumously.
So you're not waiting for that. You're just going to go forth and do it yourself. I mean, that's typical military brat ingenuity.
Well, it is, and I want to, and this is a good point. I have had people contact me. They can contact me through that Facebook page or through my the Brad Penn website if they've got ideas. I have had several people step up. This is not a, again, this is not a individual effort. I've had input from a lot of wonderful brats on how to go about this thing. And it, let me tell you, it is heartwarming.
Well,
it is heartwarming.
Well, it's like what we say at the museum. It's taking an entire village to build this one museum. And we are. We're meeting people who give us advice, and they give us a reality check sometimes. And it is heartwarming to see how many people want good ideas to come to fruition.
Well, one gal asked me, she said, who do you envision presenting these pins? And my natural thought was parents, of course. And she shared that her parents were both gone, and she said, you know, she said, I would like a vet to present mine to me.
That would be wonderful.
It would be, both for the brat and for the vet.
So, when does production begin on these pins?
Well, I should have the final design this week and have it to a manufacturer. I've got a couple of three sources, and I'll take bids on them. My guidance on this pen is simple yet elegant, and I'm not going to sacrifice quality just to get the thing out. I'm anticipating having pens in hand by 30 September.
Wow. Now, are you allowed to give us a little tidbit on what they're going to look like? Or is that a secret?
We don't have a lot of secrets left anymore, it seems. But what we're looking at doing is using the dandelion on the base of the pen, surrounded by a border that looks like a dog tag chain.
I think it sounds lovely. I'm really excited that this is going to come out very shortly, right in about a month or so. And so I really do wish you all the best on that. And you've been wonderful to talk to, but we need to wrap it up now. Is there any very quickly, any last little memory that you hold very fond to you about being a brat that you could leave with the listeners?
I think being a brat gave me a privilege that I can never repay.
Wow.
It gave me a life I will never repay, be able to.
That is wonderful. And I understand, being a brat myself, kind of what you're going for there. So I needed to wrap this up, and so I wanted to say that once again, this is Circe Olson-Westner, Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is our podcast, Together We Serve, and I have been speaking to Lieutenant Colonel Bob Holliker, an Air Force veteran, an Air Force brat, and someone who is going to bring us a brat pin to commemorate the sacrifices and the support that military brats have given to their families. So I wanted to thank you very, very much for this wonderful interview.
Well, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. So thank you.